How about the Jesus car, though, huh? Why didn't I think of this? Why not write a novel about a cow that has Jesus on its side? I had one with Moses, but he doesn't have a recognizable profile. So it never went anywhere. Would you welcome, please, Michael Perry joining us today live and in person? His new book is The Jesus Cow. Did I mention that? Hi, Michael Perry. How the heck are you?
Doing all right.
Yeah. So you ever think about politics as a career?
Nope.
Nope? Because it'd be a governorship open pretty soon. No. If he wins, you know, they'll have you open. You know. You don't have any political ambitions?
I do not.
No.
Well, I do, but they're for other people.
Yeah. Well, who do you have them for? Let's go through then. Yeah. Are you a Trump man more than anyone?
No, I'm just not going there.
I noticed that's one of the things you won't talk about is politics. Why is that, Michael?
Because I dedicated my new book to the quiet ones.
The quiet ones.
There's a lot of quiet ones out there, and they never get heard. And
okay.
Anything I have to say would be rehashed rhetoric. So I lay it between the lines.
Oh, okay. I like that about you, I guess. But politically, who do you back? Geopolitically, which side of the chasm do you fall on? Country libertarianism?
I write about people of all stripes,
yeah.
And I live with people of all stripes,
okay.
And I do my best to convey.
But if they're wearing stripes, you know, they're probably prisoners. That's, right. That's one thing to watch out for. Okay, let's get off this. I don't know. Just getting anyhow. Jesus cow. There it is. Isn't it, in fact, fairly common for a calf to be born with Jesus on its side in the country?
Yeah.
Because anything can happen on the farm.
Happens quite a lot. Actually, the book itself, while it's clearly a comic novel, at least that in theory,
mm-hmm.
that is up to the reader to decide.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And Amazon reviewers.
It's a farce. It would be, if it was a play, it would be a farce. Farcical. And in a good sense. I love farces.
I love the qualification. In the good sense.
Good sense of a farce. Not,
as
this
books
is,
go.
Not like my marriage, you know. That's, we're talking about a farce.
But yeah, the book itself, although it's a farce,
yeah.
It's based on something very common, which is pareidolia.
Pareidolia.
Which I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. I know
how to spell it.
I know how to spell it, and I know
how do you spell it.
I know what it means. Pareidolia. And
pareidolia.
Hopefully, no one will check that now because I just kind of rattled.
Sure,
that
you're
off.
Not thinking of paradoxia.
No, paroxysm.
That's an ejaculation of some sort. It is. Look it up.
I don't need to look it up. I know it when I see it. So
we're getting a little far afield here now. What were you saying? What is pareidolia?
So pareidolia is it's a phenomenon in which the human brain has the capacity, if you look at a bunch of spots or disparate objects, your mind has the ability to draw them together
right.
into something you recognize.
Make some form of
it. And so it is that on a regular basis, on the internet there, you'll see a picture of a grilled cheese and someone can see the image of Christ, or a wet spot on a wall and they can see the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And the seeds for this book were planted a long time ago. I used to do a lot of writing in a coffee shop in Nashville, Tennessee called Bongo Java.
Hmm.
Hopefully they'll sponsor the show after this. But
yeah. You're always doing that. I love the way you always try to reach out.
And back then, and this is in the 90s, when you'd go to pay for your coffee, underneath the cash register, they had this little glassed-in and illuminated shrine, which contained a cinnamon bun that looked like Mother Teresa.
And but all cinnamon buns look like Mother Teresa.
It really did kind of look like Mother Teresa, although, as I say, it helped to know ahead of time it was supposed to look like Mother Teresa.
And that's why, what you say.
Yeah, yeah, and they called it the nun bun. And they sold nun bun coffee mugs and nun bun T-shirts, yeah. Or at least they did, until they got a letter from Mother Teresa's attorneys.
Really?
They did.
Seriously?
Yes, and she, to be fair to Mother Teresa, she did not object to them having fun with her, but she did object to them making money from her visage. And so,
no kidding.
So they had to shut that part of it down. But And then in 2005, in the dead of night, someone broke into Bongo Java and stole the nun bun. It subsequently was said to have resurfaced in Seattle, but those of us who follow this closely think that one's a fake.
Yeah.
So...
It's like a shroud of current now.
Great mystery.
Yeah.
But then I just got to thinking, you know, this happens fairly often, but what if it happened in a small town and... you know, this bachelor guy.
Bloomer?
Just,
you know, like Bloomer misspell?
Or maybe even a little north of that, you know.
Boomler? What do you call it? Boomler?
Well, a guy makes errors sometimes. We can talk about that. There's a doozy of an error. Even though it's a fiction book, there's one thing in here that I ought to gotten right, and I blew it. But,
what is it? What was it? Come on.
Well, there one of the characters in this book, while it is a farce... there's a very gentle character in here who's based on three real people in my life, and it's a very devout Catholic widow. Yeah. And I was not raised Catholic. I was raised in an obscure fundamentalist Christian sect. Yeah. And as you know, I like to say that because it makes people uncomfortable.
Yes, I'm very uncomfortable right now.
And now I'm what I refer to as a bumbling agnostic with traces of amateur existentialism.
Yeah.
Or to put it in another way, I ain't looking for a fight. I'm just looking.
Yeah, good.
But anyways, despite my raising, we had some neighbors who were very devout Catholics, one widower, and then now on the farm where we live down in the valley below us is a woman who's just a wonderful character and goes to Mass several times a week, and is you couldn't ask for a better person in your life. And so I'm always fascinated by someone like that and their good works and how grateful I am for their example for my children. I don't always make a connection all the way to the top, to the upper management. I can't always bridge that gulf.
Gotcha.
But I wanted to write respectfully about a character like that. So there's a character like her in the book who's very devout. But I realized when the book was in its final draft, not being a Catholic, I better get this fact-checked by a Catholic.
Yeah.
So I went down into the valley to Ginny's house, and I said, would you mind reading the Catholic passages and let me know if I got anything wrong?
If they're Catholic.
And she caught something. And this woman goes into the little church, and she lights a candle, and then she comes back out. And in under 10 minutes, and I said that she had completed the stations of the cross. There's your Catholics right there. You heard them.
Because that takes a lifetime.
Like, no, that would be the Cliff's Notes version.
Yeah. That's like an entire lifetime.
Right. So I changed it, but then I managed in changing it to refer in the book to the 12 stations of the cross. That's too short. There's been a reduction, and just so you know, that was not approved by the Pope.
I have the uncorrected proof in here.
You have the uncorrected proof. The mistakes are, there's even more mistakes than that.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be worth money.
In the final version, there are two mistakes I know of. One is I put 12 stations of the cross instead of 14, and then I also referred to, her name is Margaret Magdalene Jankowski.
Yeah. Right. And great name.
Twice at the end, my upbringing kicked in, and I accidentally called her Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Oh, I think that's
an understandable error.
Seeing that.
Yeah.
I didn't see the Jankowski following it either.
Jankowski, yeah, you bet.
Jankowski.
Yeah, so,
let me ask you this.
Oh boy.
Did you ever take your khaki? At some point in your life, did you ever take your khakis and your what was the shirt I'm wearing? Izod shirt or whatever. Put them in the burn barrel and burn them because you're tired of trying to be something you weren't?
I was spared that by never buying khakis.
Because your character in here does it. And I think, well, that's got to be Michael as a young man.
The main character, his name is Harley, and he's a bachelor of long standing. And I was 39 before I got married. And this is fiction, but a guy does draw on a certain amount of real life experience.
Fiction and farce, and your life is not farce.
Oh, well, I think you might want to run a focus study group on that. I've made a living off my life being a farce.
Tell me about
I'm
it.
A deep, always.
It ain't worth it, I'll tell you that. I mean, you come right down to it. But go ahead, you're saying, and so did you take, you didn't go to this thing.
You never
went off to university and learned about poetry and writing all that stuff, and then thought you'd dress the part, and then...
I never did do the khakis, but I will tell you this, this isn't even in the book, but I was a farm kid, and I worked on a ranch in Wyoming. I just could not be more farm and rural, and then I went away to college in the big city of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And they had a movie theater there.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal because, as I mentioned, I was raised in that church. We weren't allowed to go to movies. Oh, but I got away to college and just went crazy. And I started going to movies. And I saw Purple Rain.
Ooh, yeah.
About five times straight. And there was a stretch between 1984 and 1985 where I tried to dress like Prince.
You got any pictures of that on you? I'd love to see that. That should be the cover of your next one.
It didn't really pan out.
Yeah. I wish I could see that. I'd love to see that.
I mean, we're both Norwegian, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, well, there's that. And then, by the way, see, look at this.
Nice.
Cow.
Who
does that look like?
There's a little halo going on there. Yeah.
There's a halo on the Holstein spot. That's not insignificant.
No, that's not.
I brought this just for you. I've had this for years. It doesn't do any mooing anymore. But
it makes such good radio, too, to hold up.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Critic now. You want me to go through your show and seeing some things that don't quite work?
We don't have time.
Okay. Yeah, well, either way, believe me. Where were we now? Well, yeah, Pareidolia. So this is a small town, and it could be Bloomer, it could not. But what's the other one? Spooner? Supposed to be Spooner? What's the other one called?
No, it really is fiction. You know, I made it up. Here's what happened. Two things happened. So you have working titles. Okay. I never actually come up with the titles for my books, hardly ever. The publisher usually does that. I've only come up with the title for one of my books, and I helped with another. And the book that where I came up with the title all by myself is the book I wrote called Truck.
Truck. That take you a long time? Or?
You know, and I thought it over, and, you know.
My truck.
Weeded some things out, and
good old
went
truck.
With truck. Right. And the other one.
International Harvester Truck.
The other book title of mine that I came up with that I thought was pretty good because it was short and punchy, and there was a lot of chickens in the book. I helped come up with the title Coop.
Coop is good.
Well, it seemed like
doing one word titles for
it
quite
seemed
a while,
like a right? good idea until the day the book came out, and then I was live on the radio. I'm sure it was a nice show. It was nothing up to the standards of this show.
No,
but
what standards? How could you? Right.
So, first radio interview. The new book is out, and the host said, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Michael Perry, author of the new book, Co-op."
Co-op. Right. was that in Madison? It sounds like it was.
So I just will put a working title on, and I don't even think about it. And then for this book, I just, the working title, and when I pitched it and tried to convince them.
What was the question I asked you? I don't remember what I asked.
Well, the answer is, the working title was the Jesus Cow, and I never thought they'd use it. And then all of a sudden, one day, the cover showed up, and they had filed it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was getting to is that you asked me about Bloomer. And I have dear friends and neighbors in Bloomer, just That's 9 miles south of my hometown of New Auburn, Wisconsin. Right. And so as sort of a placeholder joke to entertain myself, while I wrote the book, I called the town 9 miles down the road Bloomer. And cast some aspersions on Bloomer, or at least some of its citizens, and then turned the book in and forgot to change it.
Yeah.
So now I've got to face all my friends from Bloomer who think I'm talking about them.
But what's the other one called?
Swivel.
Swivel, yeah. Where is Swivel?
Swivel is 9 miles north of Bloomer. Now,
where's my map when I need it?
In real life, my hometown of New Auburn is 9 miles north of Bloomer. And if you, Harley, the main character, his little farm is tucked into what I call the armpit angle of the interstate exit. And if you go to my hometown, there's still a little barn right in that little angle. And that setting was what suggested the story to me a long time ago. That and the nun bun.
Is there a precedent or a precedent, if you care to say it that way, for the villain in the book, this guy who's trying to develop everything and drive all the farmers out?
There was no particular person. No, that was more just I needed to create a problem for Harley.
Yeah.
But
let me ask you this then.
Sure.
Just to follow up on my own question.
Mm-hmm. This would be the antecedent
at this time.
Question.
Yes.
I see your scenes.
No, I forget what I was going to say. It all worked out.
That's my whole goal.
Oh, but is this the kind of thing that could happen?
Oh, sure.
I mean we've all seen it. It's a common thing in small farms and towns.
This is a guy who his family for years was the big... See, his name's Clute Sorensen, the developer, and he drives a big Hummer. with the Stars and Stripes airbrushed on each door.
Yeah.
And he has a personalized license plate that says 1MPG. And the reason for that is the same year that I was down looking at the Nun Bun in Nashville, the first Hummer.
2005 again, huh?
The first Hummer I ever saw was in Nashville, and the guy had a license plate that said 1MPG. And no, I remember thinking, you know what, pal, it's pretty a free cool. country, man. You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But the people with the pitchforks are coming for you first.
Oh, okay. And, so you didn't think it was cool?
Well, I thought it was. He was perfectly within his rights as an American citizen to do that. But
if you're going to be that way, why not put it on your plate?
Sure. And the problem that Clute has is that when he first drives through Swivel, there's some folks hanging out in the Buck Rub Bar, and it's hard to see out the windows because there's a lot of nicotine on them, and it made it blurry. And the local drunk guy thought that Clute's license plate said "I am Pig."
Yeah.
So anyway, Clute's...
I love the Buck Rub Bar, by the way. Is there a Buck Rub? There should be. That's such a good name.
Well, I'm sure there's one somewhere. So Clute is a developer, and he's trying to get the last... His family, he's a pretty big deal in Swivel, because Swivel's got 562 citizens, but Clute is from Boomler, and there's over 1,000 people there.
Yeah.
So he cuts a pretty wide swath when he rolls through Swivel. And there's a scene where he goes and ingratiates himself to the local village board. And his hometown, his family ran Boomler, but they came upon hard times when the interstate came through. And so now he's trying to replicate his success down in Swivel, and he's trying to teach those rubes a thing or two.
You know what I've noticed, too, in your books is that you write real good for women.
Well,
your women characters. Of course, your women characters sound exactly like your men characters. But
it's
sort of a country thing, because they're all like mostly working women doing, like, they're hanging drywall or they're crushing cars with a machine or something. And they, you know.
Yeah, well,
love the way they talk great.
Well, my favorite thing about there's a woman that Harley the Bachelor runs into literally in the gas station, because he wants to go for a drive one day in his old pickup truck, and he wants to go while he's driving in his old pickup truck. He wants to have a styrofoam cup full of gasoline station coffee and a gas station pastry, because sometimes the guy knows exactly what he wants. And so he goes to the gas station to get his coffee and his pastry, and he gets specifically a maple frosted cream filled Long John, because sometimes the guy knows exactly what he wants. The problem is, it's the kind of pastry you're horrified to be seen in public with. And he turns around and he bumps into this woman and he spills coffee all over her boots. But these are the things that I love to sneak in for us, because the people in Manhattan, sometimes they miss this. She spills coffee on her boots, and of course he's mortified, but when he looks down, he's thrilled because he notices two things. One, she's wearing high-quality leather work boots, but even more exciting, when the coffee hits the leather on the boots, it beads up.
And attention to detail. Attention to detail.
He knows she's been oiling that leather, and his heart skips a beat.
Oh yeah, and speaking of boots, as you were, it seems to me as now the character Harley there falls in love with this woman. The biggest love story of his life was because this woman was wearing like motorcycle boots, was it?
Well, and just good high quality work boots that have been oiled and taken care of.
And some sort of hat that he also found.
The hat. Really, what put him over the edge is he's real uncomfortable, so he leaves as quick as he can. But as he's leaving the parking lot, he stops with his turn signal on and waits and watches in the rearview mirror because he wants to see what kind of vehicle she gets into.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets into, he's thrilled when he sees she gets into a big red F-250 four-wheel drive. But even that, he notices not so much the four-wheel drive, but it's winter and she's got skinny tires on. And he knows that's important because some dumb boy would just have big, fat, macho tires, but she's got skinny tires because they're better for getting through the snow.
Yeah.
And then he notices that behind the cab, she has a headache rack, and hanging from the headache rack is her own personal set of tire chains. And at that point, he's gone.
Yeah. Headache rack. Another one there. Another tavern name.
That's good. Yeah, there you go. The headache rack.
You're just a mass of tavern names. You're a secret to writing.
Those are my people.
And, of course, then hysteria ensues. Can we say that?
Well, yeah, he tries to keep it quiet, and that doesn't work. And then he figures, well, people are showing. It goes viral. Someone
goes viral.
The lady who delivers the mail takes a picture of it and posts it on Twitter. Hashtag Jesus call. And off they go. And so at first he tries to keep it local because he feels loyalty. And so he goes, you know, the fire department, we run a softball tournament in the beer tent every summer. We could probably just handle this Jesus call thing. And so they set it up to try and run people through, and they're going to use it as a fundraiser to raise money for a thermal imager.
Thermal imager, yeah.
But things go. And the chief is excited because he's got his new incident command system and his whiteboard and everything. And
his phaser on his...
Yeah, he's got his phaser tone on his siren, and he gets to use it quite a bit, and the constable gets to use his megaphone, and everybody's so excited. But it goes horribly wrong, and then he ends up... He has a Robert Johnson at the crossroads moment. He has to decide, and so he decides to go all in because he thinks if he makes enough money, he can save his farm from Clute the developer. And so a Hollywood agent shows up, and he signs over all the rights, and they decide to make as much money as they possibly can off this calf.
Yeah. So that's definitely a turning point. Not necessarily for the better. As we see, we don't want to give away.
We don't. This is the first book I've ever written that's got spoilers in it.
Spoiler alerts. Every few pages is a spoiler alert. Stop here unless you want to know what happens.
You start talking about the wrong thing in security, we'll just come out and throttle you.
Yeah. You got security people working with you?
And you'll find out.
Well, it's called The Jesus Cow, and it's a laugh romp and a farce, and yet it has many serious undertones in a beautiful bit of writing, as always, by our friend Michael Perry. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to see you. Don't forget Tent Show Radio. That's him, too. Soon to be running for office, I predict. He denied it too vehemently, so.